The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show, hosted by me, Robin Daly, founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that supports people with cancer in understanding and accessing integrative medicine. This week's show is a sort of part two, and it follows on from my recent show with Dr. Henry Fisher on the law surrounding cannabis-based medicines. In this show, I'm speaking to a researcher who specialises in this area to find out about the science behind the many claims. Dr. Saoirse O'Sullivan is an associate professor at the University of Nottingham, and she's speaking to me now over Skype from there. Thank you very much for coming on the show to talk to us about medical cannabis today.
You're very welcome.
So I've already interviewed Dr. Henry Fisher, who you know, and we've done a tour of the law surrounding the use of cannabis and extracts of cannabis as medicine, which was very informative. But in this show, I want to get to grips with the science behind cannabis as a medicine for cancer. There's a huge interest in cannabis amongst people with cancer generally, so I'd like to start off by asking you where you think things are generally as regards the evidence.
So the evidence for cannabis being useful in cancer?
Yes.
Yes, okay, well, I think you need to kind of divide that really into two areas. The evidence that cannabis is useful for symptom relief, and then that cannabis might actually have some anti-cancer effects. So if I talk first about the evidence for symptom relief is really quite good, because there's a lot of clinical studies that have been conducted looking at this. So the kind of symptom relief I'm talking about is reducing nausea that's associated with chemotherapy, stimulating appetite and helping people to be able to eat. And also other kind of related effects, like just people generally feeling better, having a better quality of life, having a better mental health. So people report that they feel less depressed, less anxious, less stressed when they're using cannabis. And also people say that they sleep better. Mm-hmm. And then the other main kind of symptom relief area is also in pain. So a lot of people use cannabis for the pain associated with cancer. Yeah. And in those areas, we do have quite good evidence because people have been doing trials for about 20 years in this area. Right. So we have quite good evidence that there is a statistically significant improvement in these symptoms when you're using cannabis.
Right. Okay, well, that's great. So how about actually as an anti-cancer agent then?
So this is where it gets a lot grayer, because it's really an area that is more evolving and a newer area, which means that we're at the earlier stages of the research, so kind of to provide the evidence. Mm. So from laboratory studies and animal studies, so this is where people are looking at the effects of these cannabinoid compounds on either tumor cell lines or in tumor models that they generate usually in a mouse. These studies have shown quite well that most cannabinoid compounds, including those that come from the cannabis plant, so the main ones being cannabidiol and THC. So in these animal and cell studies, it's been really quite well shown that THC and CBD can kill cancer cells and have lots of positive effects, like reducing new blood vessel growth and causing the cell to die, but also stopping them from multiplying. So, but that's in a laboratory, and often what we don't know is whether or not that translates into patients, because there is a big, big difference between doing these studies in a laboratory and actually doing them in a patient population.
Yes.
So the evidence in humans is not as good, and there aren't as many controlled studies. And I think it's really important to emphasize that. So there's lots of people who will, there's lots of people on the internet and people, you know, individual stories where they've had, people have had really good success with whatever compound they're using. But in order to be able to prove it from a scientific point of view, you need to do a controlled study where some people haven't used cannabis. And that's what we don't have any of these kind of controlled studies to be able to make that statement about whether or not there is an anti-cancer or anti-tumoral effect of cannabinoids. There is just one study that has been reported so far. So there is one placebo-controlled trial. So this is the kind of gold standard for medical research. There is one randomized controlled trial that's been done looking at a compound or a drug called Sativex, which is actually licensed for patients who have multiple sclerosis. And it is a combination of THC and CBD in equal quantities. So it's made by a UK-based company. And when you have THC and CBD together in this one-to-one ratio, it's quite effective in MS patients for reducing muscle tremors. But this company, GW Pharmaceuticals, have done a trial in cancer patients. So these were people with brain tumors. And so it's the only controlled trial that's been done so far. They haven't published the data yet, but they have released a press release that said that the patients who took Sativex had a significantly longer survival rate than those who took the placebo. So that was reported last year. So we haven't had any more details on that study, but that study would tend to give us a positive indication that there is some kind of potential anti-cancer effect of these compounds, not just in relief.
Okay, well, that's great. That's a good starting point. So can we just hear a bit from you about your particular work in this field? Because I know you've been involved for a long time.
Yeah, so I work in lots of different areas, so not specifically in cancer, but just generally in the development of cannabis-based medicines. Mm-hmm. So I cover lots of other areas. I do research on stroke, on diabetes, on inflammatory bowel disease, and on cancer. So I don't have a specialism in cancer.
Right. Maybe you just want to give us a bit of an idea of what kind of studies you've been involved in and what you found.
So I'm looking at trying to translate the findings that we get from these laboratory studies into patient trials. So I'm working in several areas. So we've done a controlled trial in diabetes because we had some good preclinical evidence that there was a potential effect of cannabinoids in diabetes. So I did a clinical trial there. We're looking at doing a clinical trial in stroke next year, and in inflammatory bowel disease. So I'm kind of working very much on the border between trying to bridge what we know from our laboratory and animal studies, and then working with the appropriate clinicians to taking it forward into clinical trials. Mm. So that's kind of the main aim of what I'm doing at the moment, is trying to move a lot of these areas forward, including cancer.
Right.
But basically moving them into the clinic, persuading clinicians that, you know, there is a good evidence base for them, and then working with them to design clinical trials, because a lot of these compounds can be moved quite quickly into human, because we know that they are safe and well tolerated in humans. So we don't have to go through the same kind of drug development pipeline as you would have to do with a newly synthesized chemical entity. So I can kind of work with clinicians, show them the evidence base, show them the safety data on these compounds, and then work with them to try and develop a study in that area. And trying to match up what are the right cannabinoids for the right disorders, I think is a key part of what I'm doing.
Right.
But on top of that, I also do a lot of laboratory work. So, you know, I'm working in connection with the Children's Brain Tumor Centre in Nottingham, working with cannabidiol and how and its potential anti-tumor effect in children's brain tumors. And I'm also working with a clinician here in Derby looking at colon cancer and whether cannabidiol could be beneficial in reducing colon cancer. And in those studies, we're actually using tumors that we have excised from patients who are having bowel resections. So we're actually using the tissue, the human tissue itself, which is obviously a lot better model than using a cell line.
Right. So there is a prospect, because of its safety profile, there is a prospect that things could move ahead quite quickly with the evidence. In fact, now there's such an interest.
Yes, actually, there's really nothing holding us back because there are medicines. There are fit for human consumption medicines available like Sativex, and there are Epidiolex and Nabilone. These are all licensed either THC or CBD-based drugs that are available and are suitable for human consumption. So there's really no reason why a clinical trial couldn't be done in any cancer setting with these compounds. But you need clinicians who are willing to do it, and you need funding. And really, that's one of the main stumbling blocks is who's going to fund the research. And the drug companies who are making these drugs aren't always necessarily interested in going after, you know, they might be developed for other reasons. So, for example, Sativex is developed for multiple sclerosis. It wasn't developed for cancer. Right. So that's not, you know, that's not the remit of a particular drug company at the moment.
But it's interesting because, in fact, anybody that was, suitably set up could do a trial because the drug already exists. There's no development to be done. And so it's just a matter of creating the right criteria for it and running it well.
Yeah, well, and having the funding, because these things cost an awful lot of money to do. That is the main stumbling block. And there's other things that we don't know. So it's not necessarily as simple as that, because something that we don't know necessarily is how these compounds interact with other medications in a cancer patient. So when we do animal studies, they're obviously animals. They're not as complex as humans. They're not on multiple medications. And you would need to know that there was no negative interactions between the kind of standard care medications that the patients are going to be on with the compounds that you want to add in. So that's something that really does need to be established. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there using cannabinoid-based medicines in the cancer setting at the moment. And it would be very interesting for clinicians to do some kind of fact gathering about who's using and how it is affecting their treatment or any of their markers, their cancer biomarkers. So we could have some kind of basic information about that, because we already have people using them, not in a clinical trial, but just using and self-medicating.
Yes.
So
yes.
Information should be out there about whether there are negative effects.
Yes.
You know, nobody is collecting this data on the people who we know are using various, either cannabis itself or cannabidiol. So there is data that we could collect to really help with that argument in persuading clinicians to do a formalized clinical trial. And the other thing I was going to say is that, of course, every cancer is different and you cannot generalize from one to another. And so there's also information that needs to be done in specific cancer settings, you know, breast versus glioma versus colon versus prostate. You know, it's unlikely that cannabinoids are going to work the same in all cancers, because they have their own, you know, they each have their own pathology and way that they work. So, you know, they need to be tested against all of them.
Right. Okay. Well, can we now go and go back and just look at cannabis when it started to be used as a medicine, with a little potted history maybe leading up to the point where its potential in cancer started to emerge?
So cannabis has been used by humans for probably about 5,000 years, that we have documentation, that we have written documentation of, probably earlier than that. But as a medicine, as a herb, we have written documentation from 3000 BC that cannabis was being used by Chinese physicians, for want of a better word, doctors. Before they wouldn't have been known as doctors back then, but people were recommending cannabis use then, and cannabis was quite prevalent in Eastern medicine kind of throughout the last several millennia, and was prescribed for the kinds of things that we still use cannabis for. So for as a pain reliever, as an analgesic, and for disturbances of the gastrointestinal system, so for nausea and to increase appetite and to induce sleep and to relieve stress and anxiety, it was very commonly used. And then in the Victorian ages, it became popular in Western medicine as well. So there were some physicians who were working out in India who did work on cannabis use in malaria, and really brought the idea of cannabis being a medicine back to Western medicine. And in the UK, cannabis was very popular in the Victorian ages as an over-the-counter pain reliever, but it was also prescribed for a whole host of really anything that you could think of, from coughs to menstrual problems to mental health problems to labor pains to it was very, very widely used in the Victorian ages. And then it kind of fell out of favor towards the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, when other pain relievers came along. So aspirin was discovered, and then opioid would have been discovered. And in the early 1900s, cannabis was declared a drug of abuse. And so that really kind of stopped the medicinal use of cannabis.
Okay. And it seems like its use, well, obviously it's had recreational use big time in the last 30-40 years, but it seems like its relevance to cancer is a kind of grassroots development. Users themselves have actually noticed its effect, and rather than coming from a direct scientific initiative. Is that true?
I don't know whether that's necessarily true, actually, because people have been looking at the anti-cancer effects of cannabis for 20, 30 years scientifically, and actually this kind of societal interest in cannabis and cancer has really only come about in the last couple of years. So I'd actually say it was the other way around.
Okay, fair enough.
There's been people researching this and doing scientific research on this for quite a long time, but at this, at the scientific level, which doesn't always translate into a medicine. And I think probably people got wind of what was happening in laboratories and the fact that there was anti-tumor effects of cannabinoids, and that has helped kind of fuel the fire of people looking to use cannabis, for self-medication. And also the THC-based drugs in the US have been licensed for probably 20 years for chemotherapy patients. So they've been around for a very long time as well.
Okay. There's a huge variety of things going on with everything from whole plant products to specific extracts. Can you kind of summarize all the different ways that it's being used as a medicine?
Well, in the ways that people are self-medicating, it's usually based around the plant. So some people like to use the whole plant, either to smoke or ingest it, involve it in their cooking somehow. And when you're doing that, you're obviously getting all of the chemicals that the plant produces, because the plant makes nearly 100 different what we call phytocannabinoids, so cannabinoids that come from the cannabis plant. And then some people prefer to use individual components of that plant. So the main ingredients or the main chemicals in cannabis are THC and CBD. And there's a lot of people using CBD at the moment. I think mainly for several reasons. It's widely available, is one of them, but also because CBD doesn't have the psychoactive effects that THC does. Mm-hmm. So THC is the component of cannabis that gives you a high, and a lot of people don't necessarily want to feel that. They want to be able to use medication that doesn't have any kind of psychotropic effect. And obviously cannabidiol has a big benefit there because you don't have those kind of feelings with it. But then other people actually really find that the effects of THC are very beneficial because you need, you know, some people want to have that kind of effect on their brain, the effect on the central nervous system some people are looking for. So I think the main thing that people are doing is either using the whole plant or using the cannabidiol that they can buy quite widely over the internet. Right. So in terms of patients, I don't think that there's anything else that patients are using. But from a kind of pharmaceutical development point of view, there is lots of different strategies that we're looking at that could be developed into a kind of a cannabinoid-based medicine. So obviously there's the plant compounds, either on their own or looking at kind of specific combinations of different cannabinoids that might be more beneficial in particular cancers, or may have synergistic effects when you add them together. There's also companies looking at synthetic compounds. So this is where a drug company has chemically synthesized a compound which is based on the structure of chemicals from the plant, but they are entirely different chemical structures. And they also have anti-tumor effects. So that's another kind of strategy for cannabis-based medicines in cancer. And then there's also ways of kind of modulating our own cannabinoid system. So the human body, people make cannabinoids in our body, and we call them endocannabinoids, which just means made in our body, within our body. And these endocannabinoids also have anti-tumoral effects. And so some drug companies are looking at strategies to try and increase our own endocannabinoid levels rather than adding in a plant or a synthetic compound. Mm. So there are really quite a few different strategies that are being pursued. And I know of quite a few different pharmaceutical companies that do have cancer in their pipeline with these different strategies. And they're trying to, you know, to translate them into clinical trials.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And also, it could be useful for people if you could make the distinction. There's all these different names around, you know, that apart from all the street names, which are the sort of underground names, there's also hemp, marijuana, cannabis. Do you want to just make a distinction between what these things are?
So, personally, I would say that marijuana and cannabis are usually quite interchangeable. Okay. People assume when you say cannabis that you mean the marijuana, and marijuana meaning THC containing. Mm-hmm. The Latin name for the cannabis plant is Cannabis sativa, but there are different strains of that, and one of which is hemp. So hemp is like a cousin of marijuana, but it doesn't contain THC. But it does contain cannabidiol. So when you are obtaining cannabidiol through the internet or in you know, high street shops, then you will be getting cannabidiol that has been obtained from a hemp plant as opposed to a marijuana plant. Right. And the reason for that is it is illegal to grow marijuana because it contains THC, and it's the THC bit that's actually illegal, not the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas hemp is legal to grow. You need a license, but it is legal to grow because it doesn't contain THC, so therefore it's not a scheduled drug. So that's why cannabidiol is so widely available, and why THC is not widely available, because THC is a scheduled drug and CBD is not.
Right. Okay, that's good.
So it's not illegal to be either consuming or obtaining CBD currently.
Right. Okay, and there's also a huge raft of product types incorporating extracts of cannabis. There's teas and creams and drops, all sorts out there on the internet. I assume there's no way to tell if these are any use other than by recommendation or giving them a go. And is trying them ever a risky thing to do?
I would have several comments about that. One of that, you don't necessarily know that when you buy something over the internet that it is what it says it is. So it may contain cannabidiol or it may not. These compounds aren't in any way, or these products aren't in any way regulated. Unlike a medicine where there are very strict regulations on, you know, the drug being exactly what it says it is in a pure format of a particular purity. So you don't know what you're getting. There have been studies done that have looked at this, and I have to say that most studies have actually found that the products do contain CBD as labelled, often at the roughly the right quantities that are on the label. So, you know, there's research that has been done that has shown that. There may be other things in there. So research has also shown that there may be some contaminants of other phytocannabinoids in there. So potentially some THC in some of these extracts, because they may not have been extracted from the plant in as pure a way as possible. You also don't know where the plant has necessarily come from and how it's been processed or treated. So that's obviously something that should be taken into consideration as well. And then when it comes to the quantities, I've seen a lot of these products give a recommended dosing. And I would kind of very strongly say that these have absolutely no evidence base. So a lot of them recommend a certain amount of drops per day, but there is no research behind any of those recommendations. So I think you need to take those recommendations with a pinch of salt.
Okay, but is there likely to be any kind of safety issue here, though?
There could be. And there could be contaminants in these products. So yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I think the main thing to say is they're not regulated.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There is absolutely no regulation of these products. So they can be really good or they can be really bad.
Yeah.
And I really couldn't say any further than that. And that is why I work in the area of trying to produce medicines, where you know what you're getting, you know that it's pure, you know it's fit for human consumption, you know how it's been produced. And you also have evidence about what the dose is that is required to have a therapeutic effect. And we don't know that at the moment. So when you see a recommendation for dosage with these products, it is not based on any scientific or clinical evidence.
Right. Well, what you just said partly answers my next question, which is to do with, many areas of natural medicine, there's always an argument in favour of whole plant products because of things like the synergies between the different ingredients and the sheer breadth of ingredients as well in the whole plant. As you've said, there's already something like 100 in cannabis, which, the extracting one of them is maybe useful, but maybe not as useful. So you've already put some of the arguments on the other side about control and knowing what you're doing. I assume that, you know, your allegiances lie firmly on that side.
No, not necessarily. Personally, I would be in favour of cannabis being legalised for medicinal reasons. And I think that ultimately it's the patient's choice about how they want to use cannabis. There is, as you say, potentially synergistic effects of using multiple phytocannabinoids together and using the whole plant. And there are some people who will prefer to use the plant, and there are some people who will prefer to use a medicine which has been approved. And I think ultimately it should be the patient's choice, depending on what it is, the indication that they're using it for. And so specifically I'm talking about symptom relief there. I think with symptom relief, it should ultimately be the patient's choice. If we're talking about an anti-tumoral effect, then I think we do need to know more clearly what we need and how much of it we need to be able to make any kind of recommendation, because every plant isn't different. So the quantities of all the phytocannabinoids in every plant is different. Every strain is different. You know, some have high THC content, some have high CBD content. So you're not always getting consistency when you're purchasing the whole plant, which may matter to you or may not. So I think it comes down to a patient's choice and what it is that you're using cannabis for. Okay. Ultimately, also going to be the major decision making there. But I think there should always be the option of having a clinical grade medicine available for the symptom relief as well, because some people don't want to use the plant for various reasons, and so they should have an option as well, I think.
Can I ask a bit of a layman's question here at the risk of looking a clot? It struck me, one of the arguments always against using whole plant extracts is this thing about knowing what you've got there. And is it not possible to kind of reverse engineer this, in as much as you produce a product by the batch and you find out what its THC level is or its CBD level is, and that you recommend the dosages accordingly? So if it hasn't got much in there, you tell people to take more.
Yeah, so in some countries like Canada, where cannabis has been legal for medicinal reasons for a long time, there will be marijuana dispensaries where you are, and the marijuana will be grown by approved producers who will regulate the content of what's in their cannabis plants. So you can, you know, you can make sure that your plants are genetically pure and, you know, have a reasonably consistent level of X, Y, and Z. So yeah, you can, if in a, where you have cannabis legal for medicinal reasons, you can implement that kind of structure where people can go and get cannabis or marijuana that has been grown by approved growers with known ingredients.
Okay, well, that's very interesting to hear.
Which is why a lot of people go to Canada.
Oh, right, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, so all the attention really so far seems to have been focused on these two substances, the CBD and the THC, and obviously there's a lot more compounds in there, as you've said. Do you think there's maybe a lot more unexplored potential?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think there's, you know, 80 to 100 different phytochemicals in the cannabis plant. I can tell you that maybe 10 of them have probably been investigated in cancer, right, but probably only a handful of them to any kind of depth of investigation. So really, the most that we know about are THC and CBD. Probably we know more about CBD than THC, actually, from a scientific point of view, but all of the kind of lesser phytocannabinoids we don't know about. Some of them, there's a few studies that have kind of tested a whole bunch of them, but really very limited research on the potential of these other compounds and their combinations. Again, you know, do you want to have a medicine which is actually combining three or four different phytocannabinoids together that might have slightly different mechanisms of action and therefore could be having individually their own effect, which is either additive or synergistic?
Yes.
So I think there's a huge amount of work that's still to be done in this area.
Okay, well, can we come back round to where we started now? You said that, yeah, you talked about the level of evidence we have. Can we actually talk a bit more specifically about the evidence for symptom control? What important trials have been done recently and what they concluded?
The important thing is actually that there's been a lot of trials done in this area. So the kind of highest level of evidence is when you do what's called a meta-analysis. Do you know what a meta-analysis is?
I do, but do tell all the listeners.
Okay, so a meta-analysis is where you get, you take the results of multiple clinical trials and you add them together. And so our best evidence comes from knowing about the drug being looked at in the biggest population possible. And so if each study is between 50 and 100 patients, then you get, you know, a certain amount of evidence from that. But then if you add 10 trials together, each of them looking at 100 patients, and suddenly you have evidence from 1,000 patients. And obviously, that is stronger evidence. So meta-analysis is where you add together the results statistically of lots and lots of trials to come up with what you would say is the definitive answer on the effectiveness of a particular drug in a particular area. Mm-hmm. And there have been recent meta-analyses that have been done on cannabis in cancer, one specifically looking at pain and one looking at nausea and appetite stimulation. And both of those meta-analyses have concluded that there was a significant benefit of cannabis. Mm. So that is really the highest level of evidence that you can get for a drug. So that's why I think that for symptom relief, we can kind of quite conclusively say that for some people, you know, cannabis will be very effective. Mm. The reason we don't have that kind of level of evidence for tumor, you know, anti-tumoral effects, is that so far we only have one trial.
Yes.
So we can't do a meta-analysis until this has been done lots of times. Mm. So the meta-analysis in pain and in nausea are positive.
Right.
Those meta-analyses will have combined cannabis-based medicines they will have grouped them all together. So some of the studies will have been where the people are kind of smoking or ingesting or inhaling marijuana, and some of them will be where they were using the approved medicines like Navolone or Sezamet. So it will basically combine all of the cannabinoid-based medicines and kind of lump them under a big umbrella.
Right.
And say, when we look at all studies done with these compounds, we found that there was a significant effect of cannabis-based medicines. Well, so it's not particularly looking either the plant or the extracts.
Right, but it's useful to have that generalised information, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what. Yeah. And those kind of meta-analyses tell us lots of things, because you really only learn more about a drug or about a medicine the more people it's in. Mm. So you can start piling together, you know, who are the people that this works for, because cannabis doesn't work for everybody. I think that's really important to note. Some people don't get relief from it. Some people find it amazing. And then you've got everything in between. It's like all medicines, you know.
Right.
Not all medicines work for everybody. And so, you know, there are some people that respond really well, and there are some people that have a medium response, and some people who don't respond at all, and also who really don't like it, you know. They don't tolerate it very well.
No.
So, you know, it's important to get as much evidence as possible from as many patients as possible. Mm. And we just don't have that evidence from looking at the anti-tumoral effects of cannabinoids.
Right. So those two areas you described are both very important ones. The one, the anti-nausea, obviously, for people who are undergoing treatment for cancer, that is enormously important. The huge number of people who are having drugs to try and keep control of their nausea, this is a relatively harmless way of doing the same job.
Yeah, but unfortunately in the UK, those drugs aren't licensed, so those drugs aren't approved. In the US, they are approved. There are two THC-based medicines that are approved by the FDA for chemotherapy patients. But in the UK and in Europe, we don't have any approved cannabis-based medicines in chemotherapy.
Right, but there's plenty of reason to have them, so we should push for them if we can here.
And I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't know whether the drug companies have gone to the European regulatory agencies, because each regulatory agency acts completely independently to approve drugs. So you know, it's quite common to have some drugs approved in some countries and not in the other.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know why that is.
Mm.
But you would think that the level of evidence sufficient to have it approved by the FDA, that it should be sufficient to have it approved by the MHRA.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, does it?
The UK doesn't necessarily work like that. But if you're in the US, there are approved medicines you can have prescribed.
Good. And the other area you spoke about, of course, is enormously important, pain, and applies to people whatever treatment they're doing, because they're likely to experience pain with cancer. Some of it very severe. I mean, is cannabis useful for the worst kind of pains, like bone pain?
There's a lot of studies. I mean, not just in cancer, but in all kinds of chronic pain settings, that have found that cannabis is useful. And also, the other kind of really good thing about cannabis in a pain setting is that when you use cannabis with opioids, you tend to get a synergistic effect. So it improves the efficacy or the effectiveness of the opioid drug. So people who aren't getting sufficient pain relief with currently available pain medications often find that cannabis will help for them. And that's in all kinds of chronic pain, neuropathic pain, in diabetes, in cancer, in arthritis. I mean, all kinds of pain models. And pain is one of the kind of really well-known indications for cannabis. And I would say with pain, you really do need to have THC there, because THC is really one of the components of the plant that has the pain relieving properties. CBD does as well, but THC is really what you need there.
And are there any downsides of cannabis at all?
Yeah, there are lots of side effects. And they will be to different degrees in different people. I think what's important is that there doesn't seem to be any very significant side effects, or what we would call serious adverse events associated with cannabis. But the non-serious adverse events are multiple, and it depends on whether or not there's THC involved in the medicine. So you've got a different side effect profile for cannabis-based medicines that include THC, so that would be the plant, and those that don't. So those that include THC, obviously one of the main things that people would say as a side effect is the fact that you can feel high, you can have you can hallucinate, you can have altered time perception, you can have effects on memory, the kind of things that would be kind of associated with cannabis use. Yes. But they're generally all associated with THC being present in what you're using. For cannabidiol, interestingly, some of the things that have come out are sleepiness, which some people would say is a positive thing, but other people would say is a side effect.
Yes.
Cannabidiol can have a negative impact on appetite. So for some people, it makes them eat less. And it can make both compounds can make people feel faint and dizzy when they stand up, or lightheaded. And both compounds can have side effects associated with the gastrointestinal system. So some people would say that they would experience either diarrhea or constipation with cannabis. So they're the typical kinds of things that people would report with cannabis-based medicine. But for most people, it would be well tolerated, and that people would find that that the side effects were not outweighed by the beneficial effects on symptom relief.
Right.
So, you know, there's some things that you will tolerate. If you feel less pain, you might tolerate feeling sleepy, or you might tolerate a bit of GI disturbances. So most people will tolerate the medications.
Right, right. So in the world of integrative medicine for cancer, there's always a kind of new kid on the block, the approach that's causing a stir, and eventually they all settle down and they take their place in the range of options available, and some of them are seen to be more important than others. Cannabis is certainly enjoying the new kid status right now. Where do you think it's going to come to rest after the initial hype's died down?
Well, actually, I think we're probably really only at the beginning of it, because of the fact that off the back of the hype, there are lots of pharmaceutical companies that are looking at this very seriously. Mm. So I actually think the next 5 to 10 years that this research area, and specifically in the clinical setting, is only going to grow, and that there are probably going to be a lot of trials off the back of all of this interest and people wanting to develop medicines in this area. You know, that's what we want to do. So I don't think this is going to die down for a while yet.
Well, good. I mean, of course, we need some approaches with real potential. So that's very good news. just want to finish off. I mean, it's clearly a bit of a wild west out there and definitely buyer beware territory. Are there any useful tips to help avoid wasting precious resources and time and to give people the best chance of getting something useful, even with the simplest products like CBD oil?
The problem is, I don't know if there is any way of insurance because they're not regulated.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the product market because it's not what I do. I'm not, you know, I would consider all my product market to be like a dietary supplement rather than an actual medicine. I wouldn't consider them to be medicines because they're not proven. Yeah, that's all I can say about them. So I would just say buyer beware, and if possible, speak to your healthcare professional as well, just to let them know what you're doing and what you're taking.
Mm-hmm. Always good advice. Okay, well, look, that's definitely given some perspective on what we do and what we don't know about cannabis from a scientific standpoint. And I'm certain that many of our listeners are going to appreciate that. So thanks very much for sharing some of your experience with us today, Saoirse.
That's no problem. It was lovely to speak with you.
Well, it seems that the science and the anecdotes are both pointing towards a massive potential for cannabis-based medicines. An important step we need to take as a nation is to decriminalise cannabis to free up the whole area so that the maximum amount of benefits can be achieved. So along with the links to material from today's show, you can also find a link to the campaigning organisation pushing for this change. Do support them. All the links will be found on the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and just click the show logo that's on the homepage. Thanks for listening. Do join me again next week when we'll be celebrating an anniversary. Goodbye.